This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So, you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
All right, welcome back into the show. Coming up in 15 minutes, we'll be joined in studio by Ryan Lefevre. Let me tell you that Basketball Madness is coming to Kansas City. Today is the championship game of the NIA Men's Championship. Down at Municipal Auditorium, 16 teams, 15 games, one national champion. I will be down there today, so if you want to stop by and say hello, I will be happy to chat with you as I am at the NAIA Men's Championship game coming up later today at Municipal Auditorium. It's been a while since I've seen a game at Municipal Auditorium. Really excited to go down there. I've actually never been to the NAIA tournament before. Got some free time tonight. No basketball, baseball right around the corner, so really looking forward to going down there and seeing what the college action is looking like for today. I want to finish our Bronny conversation from just earlier that I understand why people were upset that Bronny, in theory, took a spot from somebody. Hey, you got drafted and that took away an opportunity from someone, and that's not the way the sports are supposed to work. It's supposed to be who's the best, who's the most deserving. They get the opportunity. I would argue that's not really how life works, but that's neither here nor there. But I also think if you were one of those people that had that opinion when the draft is, you have to at least acknowledge that the kid is playing well recently. He just scored 20 points in a game last week against the Milwaukee Bucks. He just dropped 40 points in the G League just last night. He should be a college sophomore. He is improving. Let's see how his game continues. Someone else just chimed in and said, CDOT, stop it. Bronny is a career G League player. I don't know why we treat that like it's such a negative. So was Frank Mason. Frank Mason was an all-American college basketball player. He started 3 games in the NBA and is out of the league. We all know that Frank Mason can play basketball at an incredibly high level. Marquise Noel, we just saw him 2-3 years ago take a team to the Elite Eight. He cannot get on the court in the NBA. Being a career G Leaguer or an overseas player does not mean that you can't play basketball. Reed Sheppard was a top 5 pick in the NBA draft this past season, was one of the star freshmen just last year at Kentucky. He cannot get off the bench and is stuck in the G League right now. Almost 60% of the NBA has served some time down in the G League. I just think we got to allow Bronny's game to develop and see how he grows. He's 19 years old. Let's see how his game develops. Let's see how he grows. Let's see how he matures. Can he turn out to be a guy that can help you? I certainly have my questions about his game. He's 6'2 and can't really shoot it that well. He's also not overly athletic, but there's no denying he has a great basketball IQ, a great feel for the game, and he has had world-class training in basketball since he has come out the womb. Maybe there's a chance that that guy is a rotational piece in the NBA. Let's just see how it goes in his career. All right, let's switch gears just a little bit. Let's talk about round one and two of the NCAA tournament, and the ratings have come in big. TNT and CBS Sports, they have announced that this was the best viewership of the NCAA tournament since 1993. The viewership through the second round of the tournament across their networks averaged 9.4 million viewers. It was the most watched tournament in 32 years. On Sunday, when it had Kentucky and Illinois and Baylor and Duke, it averaged 10.1 million viewers. That is up from last year. Now, I think we've gotten a little bit fun with the ratings because they now come in from so many different places and they've made it easier to watch on the go than ever before. That's neither here nor there. I think that gambling plays a big part of this. But I also think that we have to acknowledge one thing about the sports consumer. I don't think that sports fans watch games anymore. I think they watch events. And that's not a bad thing. I think the NCAA tournament is the basketball event. I don't think it's the NBA playoffs for a lot of people. I don't think it's the NBA finals for a lot of people. I think there are a group of people that don't really watch a lot of basketball games, and their basketball interaction is one event. It's the three weekends of the NCAA tournament. I'll watch that. Because you just can't convince me that the NCAA tournament this season is as popular as it's been in the last 30 years. You mean like more than 95, more than 99, more than two? This is the most popular tournament in 32 years? There's one star. You don't know the coaches anymore. We used to know the coaches. You knew who the coach of Syracuse was and Georgetown was and Kansas and Duke and North Carolina. So you don't know the coaches anymore. You don't know the players anymore. It's just basketball. And that's great. I was locked into the tournament. Based on the ratings, you were also locked on the NCAA tournament. People watch events. People don't watch games. People don't watch regular season baseball games. You know what they do watch? When they play it at the Field of Dreams. That's an event. That's an event. People can find time to watch sporting events. They ain't watching games. NBA's problem is all they have are games. They don't have any events. People don't see any of their games as events. There are so many of them. People aren't really locked into regular season basketball a whole lot. Did you know that on Fox, the average viewership for college basketball this year was 800,000? It's like a little bit more than the WNBA. Like, it ain't super popular in the regular season. No one cares about that. People care about March, and there is something in our little sports brain that goes off around this time of year and tells you it's basketball time, and we all flock to the television to watch it. So it's great. The tournament will never die. It might be the ultimate American activity that is not related to football. We all love the tournament. We all love our bracket. We all love to pick our upsets. We love the thriller. We love the buzzer beater. We love all of those things. The tournament is good. But we don't know the characters anymore. You don't know the coaches anymore. We just love the event of it. We love the gambling. We love the player props. We love the brackets. We love the community aspect of it. It's the one thing that we all enjoy. I just don't think we watch games anymore. And what football has been able to figure out and why football is so successful is they make everything an event. They make the first game of the season an event. They make Sunday Night Football feel like an event. They make Thanksgiving an event. They have created events for people to watch. No other sport can do that. And when they do create that, where it feels important, we watch it in really big numbers. That's an incredible number from the NCAA tournament. They got 9.4 million viewers across the second round of the tournament, Kentucky and Illinois. You can't name a single player. You can't name the coach at Kentucky. They got 10 million people to tune in for it. It's basketball. It's the March. It's the tournament. I want to see how my bracket's doing. I want to see how my bets are doing. That is what the NCAA tournament has created. Coming up in just a little bit, we are going to be joined by Ryan Lefebvre, one of the voices of the Kansas City Royals. I got all the respect in the world for Ryan Lefebvre. I've told him this. I think one day he will be in Cooperstown, New York, as he will be inducted into the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame. But before we do that, let's take a little bit of veer off the path. We were just talking about television and television ratings. I asked Rob to do an exercise for me earlier today that I think you guys will appreciate. This week was the 20-year anniversary of the pilot of The Office. The Office is one of the more popular shows and sitcoms in television history. So I asked Rob to do this exercise. The same way that we talk about 90s sitcoms, you know, Fresh Prince or Seinfeld or Martin or whatever show that you loved in the 90s. They also had these shows in the 2000s. So I asked Rob to do one thing. This show could not have started in 95 and then ended in 03. It had to start in the 2000s. I asked him to give me his list of the iconic 2000 sitcoms. Rob, give us the list.
All right, so I will, full disclosure, when we talked about this in the office, you said, I bet the list is longer than you think. And I thought to myself, man, the 2000s is when the network TV sitcom died. But I will admit, you were right. This list, as I built it in my head, of iconic shows was much longer than I had previously anticipated. These are in no order, so don't text in, how dare you have that show? It's not four, it's just the list. This is the grouping. The Office, Parks and Rec, How I Met Your Mother. Unfortunately, I have to say The Big Bang Theory, which is just infuriating to me, but The Big Bang Theory is one of those shows. I don't like that it's one of those shows, but it is, in fact, one of those shows. And then I had Modern Family and Scrubs. That was the list that I came up with of network television that are iconic. There are very good shows. There are other very good shows that are on network television. I don't think they're iconic. I love Abbott Elementary. I don't think it's iconic yet. I don't think it has transcended. The Good Place. Also, I like The Good Place. I don't know if it's iconic. I don't know if I'm walking on the plaza or Power and Light. And I'm like, hey, did you watch The Good Place if the average person knows about that show?
I don't even know what channel it comes on.
Exactly. So I have my list of seven. That was my list.
What was the list again?
It was How I Met Your Mother, The Big Bang Theory, Scrubs, The Office, Parks and Rec, Modern Family.
Okay. Fade the music down, because some of those shows I haven't seen, but I was curious to get your list.
I said the Office was the jumping off points. That one's also on the list, but I didn't say it.
Okay, perfectly fine. You and I had another debate today, which let me know that we joke about Two Americas, and we had a real Two Americas conversation earlier today. So when I proposed this idea to Rob Brenton, and I was naming 90s sitcoms that were classic, and I said Martin. And Rob and Speck and everybody at the office looked at me and said, Martin's not iconic. And I was so confused by this. I was genuinely confused that anybody would have this opinion. And then I realized, oh, it's Two Americas. It's Two Americas. Everybody was arguing it up and down that Martin was not an iconic television show. And again, I'm telling you the confusion that I had when I heard this opinion. So text line, you tell me, 913-586-7965. Rob, Speck, Cody, Alex, Scott Parks, everybody looked at me like I was crazy that I had this opinion that Martin is an iconic television show. Maybe this is just a Two Americas thing. It certainly is in my America. It's in the top 10 of sitcoms in my America. Rob told me it wasn't that big of a deal.
To quote you about the Hall of Fame, you're always like, we're going to have a Hall of Fame that has Matt Ryan and Peyton Manning. We're going to have an iconic TV show that has Seinfeld and Martin. I don't know if they're in the same category.
Yeah, I just really think that this is the Two Americas kind of thing, because I think there's a lot of people that kind of look at Seinfeld like that, like, hey, that show really wasn't that funny. But we all acknowledge the clear impact that Seinfeld had. Or Friends, that is basically just Living Single. It's the same concept of a show.
What is Living Single?
Let's take a break. All right. Let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's get back on the same page. And let's be joined by Ryan Lefebvre. keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan. Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almased. Almased is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almased. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
We are very happy right now to be joined in studio by one of the voices of the Kansas City Royals. Ryan Lefevre joins us in studio today. Ryan, how you doing today?
Hi, Carrington. Good to see you.
Good to see you as well. You don't get around to make a lot of these in-studio appearances very often. This is a very special day. I won't see you again until maybe October.
Well, let's be fair. I don't get invited. Now, I live completely on the other side of town, but I'm always happy to come in here and talk to you.
So let's start with the beginning of the baseball season. You and I were talking about this a little bit off the air. To me, this season comes down to two individuals. This season comes down to, can Vinny Pasquantino take that next step? He's hitting 27 years old. This is when you're supposed to hit the prime of your career. And can he be a legitimate bat in your lineup? And also, can Seth Lugo repeat what he did last season? If you have those two guys as an anchor, whether it's in your rotation or your lineup, I think the Royals win 85 plus games, and I think they're back in the postseason this year.
The only thing I'd add to that is, it's going to take more than Bobby, Vinny, and Salvi this year. And, you know, Vinny drove in 97 runs in 5 months. So, I mean, if he can do this year what he did last year, the Royals are going to be in great shape. But it was an interesting year, because if you look back on 2024, and offensively, the Royals finished sixth in the American League in runs per game. You think, that's a pretty good year. But they were carried by three guys. I mean, Bobby, Vinny, and Salvi were the first trio in the major leagues to get to 60 RBIs, the first to 70, the first to 80, the first to 90, and they would have been the first to 100 had Vinny not been injured at the end of August. But when you look at the rest of the lineup, I mean, there were most everyone else had a down year. And so if Vinny can take it to the next level, and he made a pretty big jump last year, yeah, that'd be great. But they need Jonathan India to be what they think he's going to be. They need Michael Garcia and Kyle Isbell to bounce back. They need MJ Melendez to bounce back. And if they do, then I don't think those three guys have to carry the team like they did last year.
How excited are you, just as somebody who has seen a lot of Royals baseball, to be in a position where they have real expectations this year? Like, one of my frustrations as a fan is, I feel like progress is so ambiguous. Well, we want to see the young guys develop. Well, we can't develop and also win games at the same time. That this year, coming off of everything that they did last year, I think that fans are holding them to an expectation. Hey, we expect to be good this year. We expect to be competitive. We now know the players. We've been following the offseason moves. We just haven't had many years like that in Kansas City, where we're treating the Royals like a real big league club and holding them to real big league expectations.
And I think that's fair. I think the fans should have expectations of this team. I mean, that's what the team is saying. And I love Matt Quatrero's line leading up to the season. And comparing to how you would evaluate a sports car, he said, last year we went from 0 to 60, and it was the best turnaround in major league history to lose 106 games and go to the playoffs the next year. Nobody had ever done that before. And he said, but this year we just need to figure out ways to go 60 to 65. you know, they could win 86 games again this year and win the division. They might have to win one or two more games and win the division. And that was the focus in spring training, was how do we take the next step? And the next step would be to win the division. It's a very winnable division. But if the fans have expectations, I think that's good, because the team has expectations that are right along that.
I always say in football that there's two steps that you take. You take the step from being where the Lions were to where the Lions are now. The Lions were bad for most of our childhood. They then became really good where they got to the NFC Championship game. Now it's that hard part. You got to figure out how to win one or two more games to be where Kansas City is, to be where Philadelphia is. That's where I kind of feel like the Royals are right now. It feels a lot like 2013. The Royals have proven they are a good team. Mm-hmm. Now, the difference in winning five more games, now you win 91 games, now you clear the division. Now you're avoiding the wild card altogether, and now you're one of the teams that people talk about can win the division. That's kind of what the Guardians were last year. We're heading into the postseason. People thought the Guardians legitimately could get hot and make a run at the World Series. That's where I feel the Royals are right now. They have taken the step to being viable, being competitive. This season, to me, is about, can you win 4 to 6 more games than you did last season, and really give yourself a chance of doing something lasting?
And that's hard to do. I mean, it's because there's 29 other teams that are trying to win also. And I think when you're in your own little world, and we look at the Royals, they made a big jump. We look at the additions they made. It on paper, it looks really good for the Royals. And we don't realize it, but we're discounting the other 29 teams. Like, they didn't do anything. You know, they see the Royals the way we see the Royals. Speaking of football, I remember watching the Super Bowl, and Tom Brady made a comment, and I thought it was profound, just looking back at how successful he was year after year. But he says, and he was talking about the Chiefs, and this was before the game was over. But he said, you know, you do all this work, and you get to the Super Bowl, and you either win the Super Bowl and you lose the Super Bowl. And I'm paraphrasing, but he said, but then the season's over, and you go all the way back to the beginning again. And I thought it was just a really good reminder that, yeah, when you go to the playoffs, there are expectations, your own expectations, the fans' expectations, national expectations. But the Royals are going to be 0-0 come Thursday. And so it's not like a continuation of the 2024 season. And are they going to stay healthy like they did last year for the most part? Is the starting rotation going to be the same and be healthy? Are they going to be able to hit with runners in scoring position like they did? Are they going to be as athletic as they were? Are they going to play defense like they did? We don't know, we think, but that's just all on paper right now. But the reality of it is, you go back to the beginning, everyone else is also going back to the beginning, and they have their own expectations.
Right now, we're joined in studio by Ryan LaFever. Let's go back and talk about Jonathan India, one of the new additions for this team. I really like what he brings to this team. If you look at Bobby Witt, I think I saw a stat of just how many home runs he hit last year when nobody was on base, and what he did when no one was on base. If now you're telling me that you can increase that with somebody who can get on base, somebody who can't steal bases the way that Jonathan India does, I think that really changes the dynamic of their lineup. How excited are you about him being added to this team?
Well, he looked great in spring training. I mean, he looked the part. I mean, he has, it's hard to describe this, but I think people will know what I'm talking about. He has very professional at-bats. He looks like a guy that when he's at the plate, the at-bat is on his terms. It's not on the pitcher's terms. There were games where he worked a walk. There were games where he swung at the first pitch and hit a home run. I think he has many ways to be able to help the Royals by getting on base of the other three. I think the bigger question going in about Jonathan India, what was he going to contribute on defense? Because I think the consensus was in Cincinnati that he was a suitable second baseman, but he wasn't really a natural second baseman, which is true because he spent most of his high school, college, and minor league career on the left side of the infield, playing third base and shortstop. But he was blocked at the big league level at those two positions when he got called up. They put him at second base. He did a suitable job, a reasonably good job. But I think the Reds people would say that he's not a natural second baseman. So where is he going to play? I think the consensus is if they use him in left field, I think they're going to be fine. But he looked really good at third base. I mean, really good, natural at third base. And so it's not just going to be what he does at the top of the order, but he's going to be a contributor on defense also.
You mentioned a couple of the X-factor players in Mikel Garcia and Kyle Isbell. How do they look in spring? How do you feel about them heading into the season?
Yeah, and those two, I think, are an extension of Jonathan India, because if those guys are going to bat ninth, then you want those guys getting on base because they have an impact. So if they're getting on base, Jonathan India is going to have better pitches to hit. If India and Garcia or Isbell or both, depending on what the lineup looks like, I mean, that just sets up a big inning. I think Mikel learned a lot last year. Mikel hit, I think, 4 of his 7 home runs before May the 1st, which was exciting at the time. But I think now that it's all said and done, he'd probably tell you that wasn't the best thing for him. And in his mind, he kind of thought more about home runs than he should have. Watching him in spring training, he's back to hitting the ball to all fields and his strength, which is up the middle and to the opposite field, and just getting on base. I mean, he was a force. When he would get on base to lead off an inning in front of the other three guys, I mean, it was almost a guaranteed run. So if he's on base, if Kyle Isbell is on base at the bottom of the order, and then also, I don't know if you're going to ask me about him or not, but I'll transition into MJ Melendez, who's made mechanical changes, which look good, and you know, take it for what it's worth because it's a spring training game. But I really hope that MJ not only worked on his mechanics, but just his thought process at the plate. Going back to Vinny, he drove in 97 runs in 5 months. And MJ drove in 44 runs. He drove in, the stat that's just, that I hope stands out to him more than any other, is he drove in 12 runs last year without a home run. 12. You got to find more ways to drive in runs. Vinny had about the same amount of home runs, and he drove in 97. So he has the ability to hit the ball out of the ballpark, but I hope MJ gets to a point where he realizes, I can help the team outside of just hitting the ball out of the ballpark.
This does feel like a very critical year for MJ Melendez. Just pulling up his numbers here, he hit .206 last year with a .273 on base percentage. You mentioned the inability to drive in runs. How close do you think he is to being able to turn that corner? Because it felt like, and I understand that Bobby was the biggest prospect of the three, it feels like him, MJ Melendez, Witt, and Vinny were kind of all came in at the same time. Mm-hmm. One has ascended to stardom and is maybe the best player in the American League this side of Aaron Judge. Vinny, I think, has proven that he's a pretty consistent everyday player, and we're wondering if he can take that step to being a borderline all-star or not. And it feels like MJ has kind of lagged behind those three in terms of where he is in his development, but they're all around the same age. MJ Melendez is going to be 26 years old this year.
Physically, there are things that Bobby can do that MJ can't do. He just can't. I mean, it's just the way that Bobby was built and the way MJ was built. But there are things physically that MJ can do that Vinny can't do. But I think, and I go back to, it's an old school thought, which I think is starting to become mainstream again, is that people are realizing that the ability to drive in runs is a mindset. It is a thought process of going to the plate, recognizing the situation. Willie Wilson taught me this a long time ago when I first came to the Royals and we were on a caravan together. And Willie said, when you get into the batter's box, the game will tell you what it requires of you. And so we're starting, thank goodness, we're starting to kind of get ourselves out of an era where minor league prospects are going to the plate thinking about crushing the ball. Get a ball and crush it. And they're hoping for a home run or a 3-run double or whatever. That's great. But when you're facing Tarek Skubal and he's throwing 99 miles an hour and he's on his way to win a Cy Young Award and there's a runner at third base with less than 2 outs, you might need to just find a way to get that runner in, because the chances of you crushing a ball and hitting a home run are pretty slim. And I really felt like Vinny has a feel for, yeah, I'd like to drive in 2 runs right here, but you can't drive in 2 until you drive in 1. And he did a really good job of just getting a run home, getting a run home, getting a run home. And when the season was over, he had 97. When the season was over, MJ had 44.
Right now, we're talking to Ryan Lefevre in studio. I really like Mikel Garcia. Maybe it's just growing up in Kansas City, there's just always those Royals players. They weren't the star players you dislike. Mm-hmm. Rob and I were joking yesterday about Aaron Guile. I used to love Aaron Guile. He was just a do everything. I just loved him. I kind of feel that way about Mikel Garcia. I know he's not one of the star players on this team, but it feels like if the Royals are going to be able to hit their ceiling as a team, the same way that in 14 and 15, you just had so many guys that played their best baseball at the right time in their career and they intersected with each other. I kind of feel like Mikel Garcia is one of those guys that if this team is going to hit its ceiling, you do so with the best version of Mikel Garcia, whatever that ends up being.
Yeah, I'm a big Mikel Garcia guy too. For everything that he can do, he plays good defense, he can run, and now they're going to find out if he can play around the field. You know, can he play the infield and can play the outfield? His attitude is good for the most part.
Where do you think he best suits to play? Do you think he's an infielder or an outfielder?
I don't know, and I don't think the team knows yet. I mean, if people ask, well, what's the biggest question mark for the Royals? I think the biggest question mark right now is they went into spring training and they wanted Michael Massey to try the outfield. They wanted Jonathan India to try the outfield. They wanted Michael Garcia to try the outfield. And in Arizona, there were a few games where, I mean, if you're going to be tested, you want to be tested in Arizona because it's very difficult to play the outfield there because of the sun and whatever. So that was the question. We're like, how is all that going to shake out? How are you going to find playing time for guys? Because you can make a lineup that has the right guys in there, but can they get the job done defensively, especially at Kauffman Stadium? I mean, you have to be able to cover some ground. But with Michael, and I'd forgotten this, Michael had a down year. No way around it. He finished the season. I'd forgotten this. He finished the season 0 for his last 17. The playoffs began, and I think he went like 7 for 22 with stolen bases. His on-base percentage was .348. So there was a feeling that when the situation called for a little more, whether it meant the game was on the line or maybe they're at Yankee Stadium or whatever, that he could rise to the challenge. It's getting him what the good major leaguers do. You have that mentality, whether you're playing the Yankees at home or the Dodgers at home in front of a sellout crowd, or you're in Sacramento at the end of the year, or you're George Steinbrenner Field playing the Rays in the middle of the summer, that every single game, every single at-bat means something. And I think that was the message to him. But everything physically is there. The way he started out last year, I thought we're going to see Bobby Witt Jr. and Michael Garcia right next to each other on defense and right next to each other in the lineup for the next 10 years, but he has to earn his way back.
Let's talk about the rotation. I thought what really helped this team last year and what they were sort of unable to avoid in some of the past years is their rotation just never allowed them to get into a tailspin. Mm-hmm. You've seen this with the Royals where they have a decent April and then in May they hit a little bit of a tailspin and their pitching just bad start after bad start. And next thing you know, you were 15 and 15. You now look up and you are now 16 and 27. And it feels like you are out of it. Their rotation kept them in it even when the offense wasn't playing at a high level. I really like their rotation. If you're telling me that 1 through 4, they got Reagans, Lugo, Michael Wacha, Michael Lorenzen, and you throw in Chris Bubich, you got a chance to win just about every game that you start.
Yeah, it's got a chance to be every bit as good, maybe even better than it was last year. Denny said this going back to our first years together, and I was always raised with the importance of a good starting rotation on a winning team. I mean, every team wants to have a good starting rotation, but winning teams need to have a good starting rotation. But the way Denny broke it down made sense, that if your starting rotation is strong, it takes the pressure off of everybody else. The bullpen isn't pitching 5 or 6 innings every single day because the starter is only going 4 or 5 innings. Your offense comes... Hud says this all the time during the telecast, that you know, he remembers days going to the ballpark when their best starter was on the mound. And there was a feeling that we're going to win this game even before the game even starts. And maybe even more importantly, we just need to score 3 or 4 runs and we're going to win this game. So it takes pressure off of the offense as well, because you and I have lived through a lot of seasons here where, you know, guys get out of their car in the parking lot and they got to figure out how they're going to score 7 runs tonight, you know, to have a chance. And even the best offenses just can't do that night in and night out. So it takes the pressure off the bullpen. It takes the pressure off of the offense. And you usually get really good defense when your starting pitcher is throwing strikes and everybody's alert. It's no surprise that when you usually have a bad pitching team, you usually have a bad defensive team too, because you're putting guys to sleep. There aren't the degree of urgent moments aren't there where the defense is alert all of the time. And so if you can begin with a good starting rotation, everything else seems to fall into place. And the Royals had a great one last year. I mean, they had the second best starting ERA in the major leagues last year.
Let's go to the bullpen. Let's say that on Thursday it is 3-2 heading into the 7th inning. They got a quality start. It's 3-2. How do they handle the 7th? How do they handle the 8th? Who comes in as their closer on Thursday?
I don't know, but it's going to be some combination of Carlos Estevez and Lucas Ursig. Now, that's the season plan. Specifically on Thursday, I don't know. Estevez is still coming back from missing spring training because of a sore back. I was there on Friday was the last time that I was in spring training before I came home. And his velocity was up, but it wasn't quite to what he's accustomed to. So that was the plan, at least coming into the season. But unless something happens in the last week and that velocity gets up to where he's used to, if Lucas Ursig didn't prove he could handle the big moments last year, I don't know what anyone was seeing, because, here's a guy that never really was a full-time closer before, and he was in the biggest moments in the Baltimore and the New York series in the postseason. So he's the closer of the future. I think there's no doubt about that. But it's nice to have an alternative. Lucas Ursig is a wonderful human being. He's an unselfish teammate, and he's okay with sharing that closing role with Estevez.
Who's the X factor in the bullpen, the way that you and I were discussing Mikel Garcia or a Kyle Isbell in the lineup? Who is that player in the bullpen? Who's that pitcher where they can be a long relief guy? They can be a bridge if you need. You need one or two of those guys to emerge throughout the course of the season. Who do you think that could potentially be?
Well, there were two guys last year that really opened some eyes out of the bullpen, and it was Chris Bubich and Daniel Lynch. And I think going into the year, the feeling was one of those guys was going to be a starter and the other guy was going to go to the bullpen. And not only was he going to go to the bullpen, but he proved last year he could handle the bullpen. And if it was Bubich, who it's not because he's in the rotation, but, Bubich pitched, got a hold in every single win in the postseason. He appeared in four games in the postseason, Bubich did. He pitched in the eighth inning in every single game. You talk about he didn't make a big league appearance until July 7th, and now we're in the postseason and he's pitching in the eighth inning or later. Daniel Lynch didn't quite have the high leverage that Bubich did, but Daniel Lynch proved last year that he could be a good bullpen piece. So I'm gonna say him, because he hasn't shown as much as Bubich has, but he showed enough last year that the team was comfortable that if he didn't make the team, he wasn't going to go to Omaha and be ready to go as a starter. They think he can be effective in the bullpen.
I've got a lot of, I don't consider them random questions, but maybe not specific to this year's team. I'll ask you the first one now. Tell us about your first opening day.
Well, my first opening day as a broadcaster was here in Kansas City in 1999. I had worked with the Twins for 4 years prior to coming here, but I was the fifth announcer. Our main radio announcer, the late Herb Carneal, similar to Denny, he scaled back his travel, and by the end, he was just doing home games on radio, so I did road radio. And then Dick Bramer, who up until a couple of years ago was their television voice, he would take games off for, just because he had time off. And then when the football season started, he would leave to go do University of Minnesota football. So I would fill in for him. But everyone was available on opening day. So I never got to do an opening day as a broadcaster. And so here in 1999, my first year with the Royals, that was my first opening day where I was actually on the air calling the game. And if you're asking me, what memory do I have? There's one and only one. It's the bottom of the first inning. We're facing the Red Sox. Pedro Martinez is pitching. And Joe Randa hits an opposite field home run in the bottom of the first. The crowd goes bananas, and I'm thinking, wow, this is really cool. But I remember listening to Denny, and Denny's like, high fly ball, right field, gone, Joe Randa. And he just laid out, and the crowd's roaring. And I look over at him, and he's just writing down home run on his scorecard by Randa, while Randa's circling the bases, and the crowd's going crazy. And that, I just remember thinking, I've never broadcasted an opening day. I certainly haven't broadcasted a home run on opening day. And Denny handled it, just so smoothly, and went on to the next hitter. And that was that by far was my biggest memory of opening day.
Right now we have Ryan LaFever in studio. He's going to hang around for one more segment. I have maybe five or six questions that I've never got a chance to ask you, but you're here.
Great.
We're celebrating opening day.
Let's go.
Do that next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
Hey, it's Cole Reagans from the Kansas City Royals. You're listening to The Drive with C-Dot on 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Back in right now, we have Ryan LaFever joining us in studio. All right, I have a handful of questions to ask you before you get out of here. Let's start with question number one. How crazy is it that the World Series was a decade ago?
I can't believe
that.
10 years ago, I can't believe it. Yeah, and we have a great celebration this year. We're not only going to celebrate 15, but we're going to celebrate 85. That was 40 years ago. So, yeah, I have no other way to say it than other than you did. It's just crazy to think that it's already been 10 years.
I tell you this all the time. Eventually, they are going to ask you about the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. You just got to send them one piece of audio from your career. Your call in the eighth inning against the Houston Astros, it is broadcasting perfection. Just the speed, the tempo, understanding the moment. You got excited at the right points. You were the soundtrack for the 2015 playoffs for a lot of people. It was, I'm telling you, it was a masterclass in broadcasting.
I appreciate that. And I mean this sincerely. The playoff games are easy to do because every pitch means something. You know, people are paying attention. You don't have to fill because every moment means something. And I you just gave me the biggest compliment I think you could give a broadcaster. This didn't mean a lot to me when I was younger, but now, you know, I'm 54 years old. This is my 27th year with the Royals. So when this season's over, I will have been a Royals broadcaster for half of my life. And now, you know, people who are 25, 30 years old will say, I've been listening to you my whole life. And I think the neatest compliment now is like, you know, when I hear your voice, it reminds me of sitting in the living room with my parents. You know, before I would go to bed, we'd watch a couple of innings. Or my dad and I used to work on the car in the garage, and we had the radio and the game on in the background. And so when I hear your voice, it reminds me of my childhood and brings back good memories. I think, you know, at this stage of my career, that compliment is on the very top of the mountain.
Is Jake the person that made you feel this way? Because Jake is probably one of those people that when he was, hey, who do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be Ryan Lefebvre.
Well, Denny was broadcasting games 2 years before I was born. I mean, and I'm 54. I'm not 27 years old. I'm 54. Denny is my dad's age. And when I came to Kansas City, I was 28 years old. My first year in the big leagues, it was the year that Jake was born. I'm his dad's age. And when he came to the Royals, he was 28 years old. So I've had some full circle in my life.
So the question we get asked a lot, and I haven't seen him just on television. You saw him in person. Jack Caglione, you just saw him in Surprise. What did he look like? You've seen a lot of baseball players. You've seen guys go on to have great careers like Bobby Witt Jr. You've seen some guys that maybe you thought they were going to be good that didn't. What's your feel? What have you seen from him so far early in his career?
Well, I'd go back to Surprise because I went down to spring training three different times. I'm allowed to come home a couple of times and see the family. And every time I came home, that's all anybody wanted to talk about, what I thought of Jack Caglione. I mean, he looks the part. He's big. He's strong. From all the reports I've gotten in the clubhouse that someone around athletes would know what this means, but he gets it. He understands the big picture. He's a good teammate. He's very polite, very professional. Problem is there just isn't a place for him to play right now. If he were with the big leagues, we've got a pretty good first baseman who drove in 97 runs and our designated hitter, at times is going to be Salvador Perez. So we, you know, they're covered there. But he also has 29 games of experience in A-ball. So not only do the Royals want him to get some experience, but I don't think anyone would admit this, even though it's true. You want to see a guy go in the minor leagues and fail and see how he's going to bounce back from that. You really want to have a nice large sample size, not just of success, but also of failure, because it's going to happen at this level. And when you bring a guy up, you want him to stay up. You don't want to bring him up too soon. Now you got to send him back down there and his confidence isn't the same. But the Royals were very fortunate to get him in the draft where they got him. And one last thing, you know, he hit and he pitched in college. We all know that. But what's lost is he didn't play as much first base as the Royals would like. So he's still learning that position. But he has the athleticism and everything is pointed toward that he'll be a good first baseman.
The biggest thing that I've learned from Denny over the years in our conversations is the great ones adjust to the adjusting.
Mm-hmm.
That you come in, you have great success. All right, they got 100 at-bats on you, 200 at-bats. They are now going to figure out what your weaknesses are. And now here really starts the hard part. They have figured out what you don't do well, and you got to figure out a way to smooth out those weaknesses and potentially make them strengths. So I think that's a really good point about Jack is there's going to be a time where he just struggles because that's part of it. Getting yourself out of that slump and getting back on the right path is usually when you can have a sustained career and can have a really, really good career in baseball.
They'd like to see a track record of how he bounces back when he struggles in the minor leagues before he comes to the big leagues.
How hard is it? I've never asked you this before. You work with a lot of different people in different mediums.
Mm-hmm.
Doing television with Rex Hudler has to be different than doing radio with Denny Matthews. Just two completely different personalities, two completely different mediums. How hard is it to make that transition where you might do it in the same series? You might have to call a game on TV and a game on radio back to back. How do you handle that?
Well, I got really good advice. So my first year was 95, and my dad, was the hitting coach of the Oakland A's. And their over-the-air television announcer was Dick Stockton. and the A's come to Minnesota, and I go golfing with my dad and Dick Stockton at the University of Minnesota golf course. And we sat down, and here I am, you know, talking to, you know, the great Dick Stockton. And the advice he gave me, and I never forgot, he says, when you're on television, your job is to make the analyst the star of the show. If the star of the show on television is the play-by-play announcer, I don't care how good the play-by-play announcer is, that's not a very good telecast. Because there's nothing I can describe that you can't already see on your screen. The analyst is the one who literally adds color to it. That's why they're the color analyst. So you make sure that your job is to make your color analyst sound good. I mean, well, that was like the gospel to me then. I was like, I was bound and determined to do that. And then the advice I got on radio from Denny was the advice that Buddy Blattner gave him. And Denny means the world to me as a Royals announcer. But I could write a book on all the things I've learned to him. But the one that stands out based on your question was, he told me, when you're on the air, I'm not going to crowd you, but I'm going to listen to you. I may not be saying anything, but I'm going to be listening to you so that I'm not repeating something that you've said. Now, if I feel like I have something good to say that adds to what you're doing, then I'll say something. But if I have nothing to say, I'm going to say nothing. Same thing. I'm new to the Royals. I just want to fit in. And so I think one of the reasons, you know, so on one hand, I'm teeing up HUD. And when HUD goes off, you know, let him go off, you know. But with Denny, I think our rapport is really good because we listen to each other and we compliment each other. We see radio broadcasts the same. We've never had a crossword in our 26 years together. So I'm really fortunate that I really enjoy the two people that I work with.
Do you have a superstition? Is there something that like mentally you need to do to get ready? Because I always say, at this point, I don't get nervous that often, but there are those moments where you got to calm yourself down mm-hmm. and you got to conduct the show. Do you have any superstitions, any rituals? What gets you in the mindset of, I'm about to call this baseball game?
You know, I probably still at this point in my career, I prepare out of fear. I mean, I don't want to go on the air and be unprepared or say something that's not accurate. So I don't know if I have a superstition, but I have never gone on the air and just winged it. And I probably, after 30 years now, I probably could go on the air with a few numbers and I could probably wing it through a major league broadcast. But when I was so young when I started, I was just telling someone today, because they're asking me, you were 24 years old. When I got the Twins job, I was 24 years old. I went to the Metrodome every year thinking, this could be my last day. Like, I could be exposed today. They're like, what are we doing with this 24? He doesn't know what he's talking about. And so I operated out of fear. And that's what motivated me. I mean, even to this day, my superstition, I guess, would be that, like, until my prep, I don't feel comfortable going on the air until my preparation is done. And then if it is, the game comes on and I just go with the flow. And hopefully what I research is something that you find interesting.
That is Ryan LaFever, one of the voices of the Royals, joining us on the show. I think I speak for everybody listening right now in the entire text line. As somebody born and raised in Kansas City that loves this city and wants to see the Royals do well, I hope you understand how important you are to us and how much you mean to us. And I think the Royals have two voices. You were the voice of the Royals for me, and I love Denny Matthews, but mm-hmm. I think Denny Matthews is kind of our parents' voice of the mm-hmm. Royals. And if you're 30, 35, the person that you identified with as the voice of the Royals has always been you. So I'm certainly happy that you're still here, and you got a long, great career still ahead of you.
Yeah. Well, thank you, buddy. I really appreciate that. I'm blessed by that statement, and I'm blessed by the team and the city that's this is home now. I've lived in Kansas City more than I have any other place in my life. So I'm very grateful. Thank you.
That is Ryan LaFever, voice of the Kansas City Royals, joining us on the show. Opening day is coming up on Thursday. Keep it right here. It's 96.5 The Fan.